Hey guys, welcome back to my podcast. Grab a coffee, grab a tea, grab whatever you like to drink, water. Today I want to talk about cerebral vascular accidents, aka strokes. So a little summary. So the brain requires adequate perfusion to perform its functions, as every organ in the body does. So nutrients are usually delivered through the bloodstream. So when the blood flow is interrupted, the brain function is affected, obviously, just like every organ in the body that suffers if the blood flow is interrupted. So this interruption can be an ischemic event, which means there is insufficient blood supply to the area of the brain, or it could be an occlusion due to a thrombus or a clot or plaque, which then prevents blood flow to that area. So types of ischemic stroke would include lacunar infarct. They could be carotid circulation obstruction or vertebrobasilar occlusion. And then there's also hemorrhagic strokes. So these are bleeds that are occurring within the cranial vault, so within your skull. So even the smallest amount of accumulation of blood can create a potential problem. If it is not managed or not caught, it can contribute to ischemic or ischemia of the brain, which means lack of oxygen to the brain tissue. So the types that we have for hemorrhagic strokes, we've got intracerebral hemorrhage, we've got subarachnoid hemorrhage, we've got intracranial hemorrhage, and we've also got arterial venous malformations. There also can be bleeds in those areas too. So depending on the time that has elapsed since the patient experiences a stroke or is going through stroke-like symptoms, the time that, if they are in a hospital or out in the community, the time that it takes to recognize and the time that it takes to get treatment is very crucial, because the more time that passes between the event happening and the time that they actually get actual recognition and treatment can mean brain death in that time frame. So the sooner we recognize stroke, the sooner we treat it, the better the outcome. Otherwise, it can have devastating results. So ischemic strokes are known to be thrombotic in nature. Often they have a transient event, so a little blip that kind of like indicates something is off, and then this can last from minutes to hours and usually resolves itself before the actual big event of a stroke happening. So the temporary blockage that causes the symptoms usually corrects itself, but then if this keeps going on, then it actually becomes an actual problem, then it turns into a full-blown stroke. So the patient in this brief moment might feel paresthesia, they might feel weakness, they could have slurred speech, and then these will usually resolve spontaneously, but these can basically vary from a few minutes to a few hours before they spontaneously resolve themselves. So these events usually happen during the time that the patient is about to go to bed or about the time when they're waking from sleep. So these events are usually discovered most of the time in the mornings when the patient's waking up from sleep and they feel something is off, or if they have a partner, their partner feels like something's off. So common sites where these blockages can occur that kind of, you know, cause these little transient strokes, you could call them. So the carotid artery is a common site. Vertebral and basilar arteries are common sites. At the bifurcation of the middle cerebral artery is a common site. And also the anterior cerebral artery or the posterior cerebral arteries are also common sites for these little blockages to occur. So embolic strokes can also present with a TIA, which means they have that transient episode, or they can have no warning episode. So they just have a stroke. They don't have like little blips of a stroke. And then the most common site for embolic strokes are in the middle cerebral artery. So these patients with embolic strokes, they usually have a history of one of these or multiple of these. So they either have a history of myocardial infarction, so they've had a heart attack in the past. They have a history of congestive heart failure. They have a history of problems with the heart valves, or they have atrial fibrillation that's diagnosed or undiagnosed. They could also have a history of bacterial endocarditis. They could have a history of rheumatic endocarditis. So in the nature of embolic strokes, these are usually caused by blood clots or plaque that breaks off and then goes and blocks off these vessels. There are very rare times where there is a fat embolus that is causing this blockage, or it could be an air embolus, or it could be a tumor cell emboli that breaks off wherever it is and then travels to the brain and then causes an embolic stroke. But the most common form is normally a clot that has come from somewhere else in the body due to the patient having a history of vascular disease. So basically, cell damage in ischemic stroke can occur in seconds. So the more times that goes on without blood flow, the greater the damage, which is why time is brain cells, because we need to recognize it, we need to treat it right away so that we can preserve as much brain function as possible. So also during these ischemic strokes, shifts in electrolytes can occur, changes in ionic gradients, and the inability of the mitochondria to produce ATP quickly will manifest as a consequence of blood flow being cut off, because the ingredients to make ATP are cut off when the blood flow is cut off. Free radicals can become rampant, affecting the ion calcium from shifting back and forth from the cerebral cells, basically not allowing them to do their normal function. And then the body will launch an inflammatory response because of the ischemic event that is going on. And ischemia is considered by the body as an inflammatory trigger or an inflammatory agent. So it's one of those things that happens in the body and then it triggers inflammatory response, which doesn't help. So as a result, edema or swelling, fluid enters, edema will aggravate, and then it will persist for about 3 days after the event. And liquefaction will occur in damaged cells, which is like where things turn kind of almost into a mushy type. And this is as a result of hydraulic enzymes being released with cellular damage and debris. And then we'll move on to hemorrhagic strokes. So these are bleeding episodes that happen deep within the brain parenchyma. Patient oftentimes have uncontrolled hypertension or undiagnosed aneurysms that rupture to cause these hemorrhagic strokes. Sometimes there is an arterial venous malformation deep within the circle of Lewis in the brain. There's also Barry aneurysms that contribute to these types of strokes. So Barry aneurysms are like saccular aneurysms that rupture and then they cause the devastation of the stroke. These strokes are classified as intracranial hemorrhage, subarachnoid hemorrhage, or aneurysms. So when brain bleeds occur, vasospasms occur along with edema because of the accumulation of blood. Blood is an irritant to the brain tissue itself. So if the accumulation of blood and its accompanying inflammatory response are severe enough, brain shifts or brain herniation will occur because pressure within the cranial vault will increase. And there's usually it overwhelms the brain's mechanism to regulate its own intracranial pressures, and when those pressures are exceeded and the brain can't compensate for that increase in pressure, it will start to push on the brain tissue itself, leading to brain herniation, because your skull is solid, it doesn't expand, so when the tissue itself expands and there's nowhere else for it to go, it starts to just squeeze through any crevice that it can find. So blood can enter into the ventricular system, where it can then be picked up by, this is to diagnose hemorrhagic stroke. It can be picked up when the doctors or the patients admit at this point, they'll do a spinal tap, and then if the cerebral spinal fluid contains blood, it will confirm a hemorrhagic stroke, especially subarachnoid bleeds. So clinical manifestations, the patient could have a sudden brief loss of eye vision. They could have changes in vision that include bitemporal, or one half of their visual field is affected, whereas the other one is not affected. They could have changes in their speech pattern. They could have a severe crushing headache. They could have changes and disturbances in their gait, so the way they walk. They could have paralysis, especially of the face of the body, of the opposite side of the body. So if the stroke is happening on the right side of the hemisphere, then the left side will start to display those stroke symptoms. And if it's happening on the left side, then the right side will start to display those stroke symptoms. They could have weakness, especially to one side of the body. They could have dizziness, confusion. They could have nausea with projectile vomiting. They could have vertigo. They could have ataxia. So this is when the patient loses coordination or they lose muscle control of their arms and legs. They could go into a coma. They could have natural rigidity, which is stiffness of the neck and those neck muscles. They could have changes in levels of consciousness. They could have seizures, especially with arterial venous malformation types of strokes. When they're holding their arms outward, like if they're being tested for a stroke, they could have pronator drift, which is where one arm and palm turn inward and downwards, which indicates muscle weakness when they're being assessed for a stroke. They could have a positive Romberg sign, which is the inability for them to remain upright if they close their eyes and they sway like side to side. That would be a positive Romberg. They're not able to remain straight. They're swaying when their eyes are closed. So they could have a neurogenic bladder as a result. They could have dysarthria, which is trouble speaking and producing speech. They could have apraxia, which is if you ask the patient, hey, can you move this cup of water? They understand that you're asking them to move a cup of water, but they physically can't perform the task when you ask them. Diagnostic tests that they will have, especially when they're just coming into the hospital, will be a CT scan of the head, and then an MRI will give us more information. And then further on, they could have carotid studies, they could have a magnetic MRI angiography, they could have labs, so complete lab work, sedimentation rate, blood glucose, cholesterol, lipid panels, homocysteine levels. They could have a lumbar puncture as one of the diagnostics. ECG will be one of them. EEG, which is just the electrical brain activity of the brain being assessed in terms of treatment. So, if the event occurred due to a hypertensive episode with a prolonged hypertension, treatment is usually focused on maintaining appropriate blood pressure. In some cases, they might want their blood pressure higher than normal just to provide perfusion to the brain area, depending on what type of stroke it is. So, if it occurred as a result of a cardiac arrhythmia, obviously controlling AFib, and then the patient will be started on warfarin when they are discharged, and then controlling, if they have cardiovascular disease, controlling cholesterol levels, having good glycemic control, and quitting smoking if that is one of their risk factors. So, in the event that occurred because of an occlusion to carotid arteries, they might revascularize those arteries to help with perfusion. And then, of course, their care will involve a lot of people on the team. So, it will be a multidisciplinary team. So, you'll have nurses, doctors, physical and occupational therapy, respiratory therapy, etc. Working with the patients to get them through to recovery. So, nursing interventions, basically, you're going to be focused on making sure that you're monitoring their symptoms, you're paying attention to safety and mobility because that will be affected depending on how bad of a stroke they have and if they have any consequences from their strokes. So patients might have changes in stamina, so they might tire easy, they might have a change in their range of motion, they might have unilateral weakness, so being cautious to that when you're mobilizing them, and they might have alterations in their senses of space, so their proprioception that tells them relatively where their limbs are in terms of the space that they're in will be off, so you have to be cautious of that when they are trying to move around in the room so that they don't fall and create more injuries for themselves because they are at great risk for falls. Obviously, medication administration and then educating them on the medications that they're being put on, why they're taking that medication and the importance of the medication, and then any monitoring parameters that they might have to know when they're taking that medication. And of course, stress the adherence of compliance of treatment when they are out in the community, and so that they can try to prevent as much as possible a reoccurrence of another stroke event happening in the future. Okay, so that is a review of stroke, brief summary of strokes and the different types of strokes and what we sort of do to treat and then diagnose. So I hope you guys enjoyed that review, and hopefully I will see you in the next episode. Bye now.